From across the country to around the world, you're listening to Terra Informa. I'm Hamdi Issawi.
And I'm Natalie Raweth. And we'll be your hosts for the next half hour of environmental news. On this week's show, we have our eye on the Wild Rose province, Alberta, though not for its advantage.
Imagine stumbling into a pitch-black mineshaft with no canary, no idea where you're going, or even where you are. Well, in a sense, this has been the experience of some northern Alberta communities for a few months now. Only they haven't stumbled anywhere. It's the mine that's come to them.
On October 31st of last year, well over 600 million litres of wastewater poured out of the tailing ponds at the Obed Mountain Coal Mine and into the Athabasca River, making it the largest spill of its kind in Canadian history. Now, more than 4 months later, inquiring Albertans are still in the dark as truth surrounding the spill has proven to be about as clear as the muck itself.
What effects will this disaster have on waterways, wildlife, and the well-being of neighboring communities? More on that story to follow, but first, conservationists are running afoul of developers and calling for emergency action to protect a bird with plenty to grouse about.
When a species of bird or prairie landscape go into decline, there's often a whole slew of reasons behind it, which makes it challenging to motivate all the different interest groups who could play a part in the recovery.
Industry, government, farmers, researchers, and activists all face the same question. What's in it for me? The difficulties in answering that question have pushed Alberta's greater sage-grouse to the very edge of survival. Terra Informa's Chris Chengyan Phillips and Danielle Dolgoy bring you this story.
Now, if you listen carefully, there's sort of a pop, and then right at the end of the pop, there's a little shh. Those individuals that have the little shh at the end are strongly preferred by females.
This is Mark Boyce. He's a biology professor at the University of Alberta. He's been researching the greater sage-grouse since the late 1970s. That noise you just heard? That is the sweet sound of a male greater sage-grouse as he struts and whistles for the attention of the females looking on.
Ooh, boy. The greater sage-grouse mate at this isolated spot on the prairie called a lek. The females, as is their right, are very selective when it comes to choosing a mate. After weeks of rehearsing, it's showtime. The females arrive at the lek and observe the males while they perform this spectacular display. The female grouse position themselves around the lek and will watch the males hoot and holler as they strut around for several days before taking one of them home. If any one of the males plays hooky even once, he's out of the running. If he shows any sign of illness, he can forget about it. No, I don't want no
scrub. The scrub is a guy that can't get no love from me. The females are shockingly astute at figuring out how healthy these males are, and Mark Boyce conducted the most epic cock-blocking experiment to determine exactly what the females are looking for.
Language, Chris!
What? They're literally called cocks, and hens in the case of the females.
Lice concentrate on the air sacs of the males, and they chew on the air sacs and create little hematomas. And I can see the hematomas, and surely the females are able to pick up on that as well. So we did experimental work and used a red magic marker and created little hematomas on the air sacs.
You drew on the birds?
Yeah, with a little red magic marker. We had an experimental setup where we had these artificial leks with males in cages surrounding a central arena. We put a female in the arena and then looked to see which males she went to sit by. And there was very strong selection for males that didn't have lice or that we hadn't painted the red splotches on.
I think it's hard to go anywhere on this planet and see something as spectacular as that.
Meet Cliff Wallace.
My name is Cliff Wallace. I'm vice president of the Alberta Wilderness Association. I also co-chair the Sage-Grouse Partnership in southeastern Alberta, where we're working with ranchers, industry, and government to try and get sage grouse back on that landscape.
Cliff has waged a fight to protect the greater sage grouse for the better part of the last 40 years. Things were going well for the protection of this species until certain industrial interests began advancing on the land to explore potential oil, gas, and mineral extraction.
So there was a lot of oil and gas activity moving into that area. And despite the advice of the biologists and Alberta Fish and Wildlife at the time, that oil and gas development went ahead.
The birds are very sensitive to disturbance, and the numbers have just been going down and down. So we went from a couple thousand birds maybe 30 years ago to the latest count is 14 males in Alberta. And they're typically a similar number of females, maybe even a few more females.
And so, you know, there was very few options left to us. We had the Species at Risk Act federally, finally, and we decided to take the federal government to court and say, this is a big problem. We don't have a recovery plan. We don't have protection for this species.
Well, I wrote a deposition and
really?
Supporting it.
And through a series of court cases working with EcoJustice out of Vancouver, we've been able to secure critical habitat in Canada on paper. I must emphasize that because very little has changed on the ground.
Just like the female sage grouse who takes her time before making her decision and acting on it, the federal government sat on the sidelines for a long time before taking action.
We've also got this emergency protection order.
The emergency order then came into effect just a few days ago. And so this is to provide more assertive protection for the birds and for the birds' habitat and to try to reduce disturbance of the birds.
There are many interests at stake here, not just biologists or oil and gas lobbyists.
When my grandfather first came in 1900, this country hadn't been grazed for a number of years, and there wasn't that many sage hens. But by the time my father was in his teens, sometime in the 1920s, there was a lot of them.
David Heidloff is a third-generation cattle rancher in Many Berries in southeastern Alberta.
I'm also a member of Ducks Unlimited, as well as being involved with the Fish and Game Club.
David has a unique perspective on the greater sage grouse. He's very fond of the birds, just not necessarily of all the attention they bring to his land.
Well, everybody keeps telling me we're so lucky because we've got several endangered species, but basically it's a big pain in the neck because we've got the bird watchers and the biologists and everybody else. Sometimes they can be an annoyance, but I do like seeing them around. They've been around for a lot of years. When they're dancing, they're fascinating, and you can hear them if you got a large bunch of them. Like at one time, a few years ago, we had over 100 roosters on the lek on our property, and you could hear them for over a mile.
David's main concern now is on protecting the ranch that his family has built. The federally leased land that the Heidloff family ranch sits on will face new restrictions on the number of animals permitted to graze.
Like this environmental protection order, we don't know how much it's going to affect us yet. And if we can only put half as many cows out there, well, that kind of reduces your potential for income for the year to 50%. There's other things that's in there. For instance, any new fences, you've got to get special permission to put up a new fence. Yeah, it can take anywhere from probably a couple of weeks minimum to 6 months.
It's not as though David is some great opponent of this species. In fact, he and Cliff have been working together to find ways to protect them.
Yeah, he and Cliff Wallace have actually been working together as the co-chairs of the Sage Grouse Partnership, which is a group representing environmentalists and the oil and gas industry and local people like David, who are all trying to work together to find ways to protect the sage grouse.
We kind of thought they should be protected, and on top of that, we kind of wanted to know what the AWA was doing. Yeah, it is a big-time commitment, and the meetings are 50 miles from us, so it's a monetary commitment, too.
Wow.
Because I got to drive 100 miles every time I go to a meeting. Usually, it's on our own nickel for getting to and from, and it's on our own nickel for our time, for sure. A lot of the people that are saying what we should or shouldn't be doing, I'm wondering if they'd have the same kind of a viewpoint on them if it was actually costing them money. Basically, I think we got to try and protect them because the percentage of the population in the rural area is a very small portion of the percentage of the population of the people in the city. And basically, it's the people in the cities that are hollering the loudest right now. Then, you know, we've got to survive. If we can't keep the guys in the city a little bit happy, they're going to run right over us.
And David makes a powerful argument. Many people's livelihoods are tied to natural resource extraction and land use. We asked Cliff why he believes the federal government is now whistling a different tune.
I think there's an embarrassment and shame thing going on here, quite frankly, that they know they have to do this. The courts, you know, were on the precipice of ruling to make sure that this happened. So they have to be proactive. And I mean, it was really on the day of the court case, just as we were heading into court, that the decision came down on the emergency order. So, you know, obviously it's that 11th hour decision making, and it's not because they're really committed to it, it's because they're dragged into it. And I think that's a pretty sad state of affairs.
So, all of that to say, where does this leave the greater sage-grouse? All puffed up and nowhere to bone, it would seem.
Oh, Danielle, don't despair. This protection is only beginning to be rolled out. The battle continues as municipalities like Medicine Hat, eager to benefit from oil and gas revenue, fight the protection order. So if you would like to someday see the great mating dance of the greater sage-grouse, here are some things you can do.
Write letters to your MLA or your MPs. I know a lot of people don't think that has any impact, but in fact, I think it's the only thing that has moved this issue forward. So it doesn't take that many people. You know, if we get a couple of dozen, a couple of hundred people, it's seen as an issue then. And if you want to get involved with the association, join up. We certainly can use your help.
Speaking with Mark Boyce at the University of Alberta, you know, I had the understandable feeling. Is the greater sage-grouse too far gone now? Is this a fight even worth getting involved in? And he reminded me that things could be worse.
We've got lots of them in North America where species have been on the brink of extinction. We've brought them back. We were down to 14 whooping cranes in the world. And we went from 14 to now, you know, the world global population, something like 550 or something like that. So we can do it.
Thanks to Mark Boyce, David Heidloff, and Cliff Wallace for their help on that story. For more information, visit our website and you can find a link to the Athabasca Wilderness Association's website. That's at terrainforma.ca. If that story piqued your interest, follow us on Twitter, @TerraInforma, and join the conversation. Come on, let's give them something to squawk about.